Welcome to Meet the Writers. I've just returned from Hay Festival Cartagena de Indias in Colombia. The event, an offshoot of the main festival in Hay-on-Wye, Wales, brings readers and writers together to share stories and ideas, featuring a lineup of over 180 artists, thinkers, and leaders from around the world. I spoke to one of the best-known homegrown writers. He's a Colombian novelist, essayist, journalist, and editor from Medellin. He's considered one of the most talented post-Latin American boom writers in Latin American literature. He's widely known for his best-selling novel, Angosta, and more recently, Oblivion, a memoir, which focuses on his relationship with his father, who was murdered by paramilitaries. On Meet the Writers today, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Hector Abad. And I take you now to Cartagena on the Caribbean coast of Colombia to listen to our conversation. Hector, you seem to be utterly surrounded by love during your childhood, and I wondered if you could just tell me a little bit about growing up in this, what sounds like a wonderful family.
Yes, and I feel that I'm still surrounded by love. I don't know why. Probably it's because there were many women at home, but also my father, the only man, was the same. I'm very fortunate. In some ways, it's also very strange. What happens in you with that? Because I have heard totally different stories about families and being surrounded by violence, by sexual harassment in the childhood. I even can't understand that type of childhood. What was that? Probably it was preparing me for also for hard times. Because my best friend in the teenagers, he commits suicide, my best friend. And then one of my daughters got cancer and died. And then, well, a lot of pain. But it was kind of a miraculous compensation in advance and then after. So life is very strange. You can have a lot of love and a lot of pain. But then probably you feel that more than 50% of life is always better than worse. It's always beautiful and not ugly.
Your father was very, very affectionate towards you, and publicly so, to the point where perhaps when you were a teenager it became slightly embarrassing for you. You didn't want your friends to see that, but it was something you came to terms with. Can you describe that relationship with your father?
It was very strange because we are from the mountains of Antioquia, and there the people used to be, especially the men, very rude and very distant, and they don't touch each other, and they never kissed the father, and the father never kissed the children. And my father's father, my grandfather, used to hit him, for example, with the reins of the horse because he fell down. So it was a totally different education. Probably it was a reaction to that education that made my father think in a very different way. And he was so physically affectionate. He smelled so well. He was so clean. He was a medical doctor. For me, his smell, his hands, what I remember of the body is so important. But of course, when you are a teenager, that becomes a little bit too much. And for my friends, it was strange in Medellin seeing this man, bald man, kissing the son. And also for my grandparents, they thought, okay, you will obtain is a sissy, is a kind of a... And yes, surrounded by you women and love, yes, he will be gay. Of course he will be gay. And I was wondering, I will be gay just because of this. At the end, I was so boring that I didn't. But it was beautiful because of the difference in the, I don't know, in the surrounding way of behaving. Probably I wrote about that in the book because it was original. Maybe in a different culture, in different families, it is that way. But in my case, in my neighborhood, in my city, it was strange. Now it's less strange. But he was also a very strong man. He was very clear in things. He could also cry and say things very sharply against what you were behaving. It was not only that love, it was a mix of also hard education. But he was not only a father, he was a professor, he was a teacher in medicine. So he was trying to find in you the best always. And I have so many carencias, Linda. I have so many, yes, lacks in my personality. But he didn't stress that. He stressed what he thought probably was things that I could develop. Words or writing letters, not talking, more writing than speaking. Probably he understood that if I took some path, one path, that could be my happiness.
He was a medical doctor. He was kind not only to you and your family, but to everybody around him. He gave his money away. He was very, very strong about public health.
Yes, there are many people who are quite different in the public space and in the private space. There is an Italian film, Vizi Privati Pubbliche Virtù, that is vice in private, virtues in public. He was not that kind of person. I realized very soon that in public, in poor neighborhoods where he was constructing tubes for clean water or housing, because he was very engaged in public health, in that kind of public health, the most elementary, water, sewers, and housing. He was also that kind of kind person. And he was very happy, much more happy than me. He was laughing all the time. He do the most difficult things, the human rights fighting, with a big smile. And that very perfect comparison between the public and the private made you feel that it was absolutely authentic and from the very deep of himself. He was not perfect. He was not a saint, of course. Sometimes he was very vain, in a way. He liked to be flattered, but yeah, we are not perfect. We are human beings.
Religion was very important in your life, even though he rejected it. You had a nun living with you at home, and of course from your mother's family, there were many, many religious connections. Just tell me about that.
The fact that my mother was and is, she's 92, a very Catholic woman, and that she grew up with the Bishop of Medellin that was her uncle. And my father was an agnostic and a very liberal man to the left. My mother was in the center. But they discussed in a very light way, in a very smiling way, about the afterlife, about going to mass or not. And my father was respecting her views, but in private he was teaching me that everything about religion was really not true. But that my mother would be offended if I manifest too openly that that things against religion. So I have a very ambiguous, calm relationship with Catholic religion. Some years ago, I really hated Catholic religion because I was expelled from the university because of a cardinal.
You wrote an article denouncing the Pope.
Yes, against the Pope, and the church position about sex is so ridiculous. But now that small churches of evangelist churches are growing here in Colombia and in all Latin America, in some ways I'm nostalgic of the Catholics. That's very strange. Today I was thinking, I am nostalgic of Bush in the Trump era, and I am nostalgic of the Catholics. That is that possible? It's incredible. Bush was respecting Muslims. What I was teach is that you have to respect even the people you disagree totally with. I disagree totally with some positions of the Catholic Church, but when evangelics here are saying that with the peace process they will kill Christians. Wow, I say, wow, I prefer now the Catholics. And in some ways it was also, it had a kind of aesthetics that I now appreciate, like, I don't know, some ceremonies that seeing from my almost old age have some kind of a nice theater.
Tell me about your father's death.
The only death he accepted was dying when you are an old person and you die in your own house, in your own bed, surrounded by the people you love and that loves you. And he was trying to achieve that for everybody, in the family, in the city. That was part of the human right. You will die at home peacefully, maybe without big pains. And fighting for that represents something politically bad, fighting for this very normal thing, fighting for human rights. Nobody can kill you. And the epidemic in Colombia was violence. Many people in the 80s began this epidemic growing of killings. He was fighting against that killing, against that fact that you cannot die at home in your bed. And fighting against that epidemic, he became, it is contagious, like in Camus books. So he became a victim of the same disease, and he was killed in the streets. But even that is terrible, ugly, plenty of blood. My father, who lived life in a very aesthetic way, he achieved to make that also kind of a beautiful message. When we found, my mother and me found his body in the sidewalk, in the street, we found a list of the people who the paramilitaries decided must be killed, and a beautiful poem. Both an ugly, dirty paper and a beautiful poem signed by Jorge Luis Borges. A poem that reflects about dying and being forgotten in the future. So it was a very beautiful last message. As how he's walking in the streets, knowing that probably he will be killed, but the only armor he had was a poem. That was beautiful.
Of course, it affected your life profoundly. You fled to Europe.
Yes, after so many years, and still when I speak of that, yeah, but affected me in a very beautiful way. So I'm not sad. What I think is, wow, it's beautiful.
You went away. It was not safe for you to stay in Colombia anymore. You were working in a university doing translation, and eventually, though, came back to Colombia.
Yes, because I am not, and I was not at all, a political activist. But when your father is killed, some people around him in politics say, okay, now you have to take the flag of your father or something like that. And I made reluctant some speeches, and then one day, going after one of these speeches where poor people talked, two very young men came to my mother and me with their hands inside a purse that was the way of having a weapon concealed. And my mother put her body in front of me, looking at that people. That was absolutely ridiculous. That I always surrounded by love. I must be the man who is in front of the mother protecting her. But no, she protected me. And then I received a telephone call that I will have the same fate of my father or something like that. And we went to the mayor's of Medellin office, and he told us, the only thing I can give you is an armor car, and you have to go to the airport now because there are many groups here killing people. And that was what we did. And then the three people who spoke with me in that session, the three people in that month, they were killed. So the man who took the office of as the head of the Human Rights Committee. So when it coincided with my leaving the country on the Christmas of the year 87. And then, yes, I stayed in Italy for some years. And then, as Italian is so close to Spanish, a dialect of Spanish. I was forgetting Spanish, and I wanted really to write in Spanish. So we came back in the 90s, in the 92.
And you worked as a journalist. You're hugely respected, great journalist here. At one stage, you even worked for a publication founded by Gabo. Your work as a journalist involves speaking truth to power. And I wondered if you're ever afraid or if you're ever tempted to self-censor.
Long years ago, I had problems with some kind of very bad universities we have here that are a kind of a business, a private business of mafioso people. But it's only that time I felt I was in danger. But no, I think in some ways in cities, things are really changed in Colombia. And I feel I can write whatever I want. I hope it will stay that way. I was so optimistic about everything, even about Colombia with all the problems. I know that many colleagues, journalists, not in big cities but in small towns far away from the heart of the country are in danger. They have been killed and still they have problems with freedom of expression. I don't have that. I have the privilege of not having that problem in big cities, in Medellin. I was so optimistic, but now I feel that the world is changing. Some people are saying that human rights are the past now, that freedom of expression is, I don't know, things that people like Donald Trump is saying in the north, or also our neighbors in Venezuela, what they are doing against human rights and against freedom of speech from the right and from the left. I'm less optimistic. I'm optimistic in Colombia because Colombia is better now, because Medellin is not anymore the most violent city in the world. In the year 91, in Medellin killed 7,500 people, and 1 year ago they killed only sorry for saying only, 500 people. Is a lot, it's still a lot, but it's totally different. So I see progress. I see progress in the peace deal. I see progress in the homicide rate. That is the way we can measure that. But also Mr. Trump is saying that he will review with a magnifying glass the peace agreement. His friends there are the people here who are against the peace process. And well, if he wants to review even probably one of the only good news that is the peace process in Colombia, what's the future form now? It's so mad. It's so mad, everything. I'm not optimistic anymore. For the first time in the last 20 years, probably. I see that probably progress is not real, that we are not going from a terrible situation to a little bit better and better and better. Probably not. Probably we are going back. That's so sad.
What do you make of the referendum result here in Colombia?
Well, Colombia is also a globalized country, so we are in the same mental form, in the same path of the rest of the world. Brexit was one pace, and then the no here, even for a very, very small amount of votes. And I wrote then, okay, you will see also Trump winning. And that disaster was also true. So we are part of the same. We are all. We have the social media, we have the lies, the post-truths, saying that guerrilla will be free and then they will kill Christians and they will impose all the young people to be gay. And this kind of mad and so ridiculous lies that you really can't understand that someone could believe in that lies, but they believe in that lies. And there is also a big amount of indifference in young people of the cities, especially. They think politics is awful, democracy is not true, we are not going to vote, we don't care. Maybe I'm getting old, and and maybe young people are correct, but maybe they are right, but I disagree.
How do you see the development of Colombian literature? Obviously, there is this huge legacy of blood, which people like you are writing about, but the fantastic tradition of magic realism too. What are the main themes for you coming through in the way that Colombians are writing fiction now?
The first fact is that we use, we speak, and we write in an old, beautiful language. So we are part of a big tradition that also English has. Old languages with big writers since centuries. So our past is also Cervantes, our past is are the picaresca novels, our past are Quevedo, Lope de Vega, this kind of big names and beautiful books and works. And then Spanish came here, they imposed the language, they killed other languages. There are still some languages disappearing in Colombia. That's very sad. But maybe Spanish is too strong, as English is also too strong. English is even more strong, it's stronger. That's why I cannot speak English. It's so strong that it's so difficult. But Spanish is very strong. That's why it's also very difficult for Spaniards and for Colombians to learn good English. But these imperial strong languages had this dark side of imposing, but this bright side of beautiful literature, beautiful tradition. So we can fish in combinations of words, in ways of music, sound in words, that we feel we are legitimate hearers of that big writers. And here they renovate things because we have different trees, different birds, different mountains, different seas. So we have to choose to find new words for that. And this mix of black people, brown people, indigenous people, mestizo people like me. And we have to deal with that diversity that is beautiful. I think we are a good laboratory of the possibility of very different cultures to mix. And that's where we come from. And difficult times are not bad for literature. I prefer good times and bad literature, but at least we have good literature in bad times, and maybe literature can help to make times a little bit better.
Tell me about the future for you, what you're working on, and also what you think will happen here in Colombia.
The future is so strange. Everything you say about the future is then becomes untrue. I hope that there will be something very special and very different, maybe in technology like internet, that will in some way help to avoid the worst of politics that is now so present. What is very bad is when I went to countries that are very, where you find a tyrannical leader, everybody's talking about him. When I went to Venezuela, when Chavez was still alive, everybody was talking about Chavez. When I went to Russia once, everybody was talking about Putin. When I went to Switzerland, nobody knew the name of the president. But now everybody in USA and in South America and probably in Britain is talking about Trump. That's a very bad symptom. When he is the only topic, it's so bad symptom of the not good health of a society. That's what I can say of the future that is not very far away. But the trend of Colombia is not bad. I hope we can have our independence here. I think that constructing that wall is not that bad for us because they will isolate there, and maybe in a few years they want to come here. And because, like in a Cormac McCarthy book or in a fantasy novel by Philip Roth, the plot against America, they have to go to the South to look for civilization. who knows? Who knows if maybe one day they really have to come here, and that the Trump will be bad for them and not for us.
What about your own future? What are you writing?
Well, I wrote a novel that will be published in English, I think, this year. The title in Spanish is La Oculta, that is the hidden one, that is the name of a farm in the mountains of Antioquia. It talks about the land, our love to the land. I am writing also a new novel. The provisional title is Perhaps the Center, Perhaps the Center. It is now in the fridge, waiting for me to to forget the novel and then rereading it again and seeing if it works or not. And that's it. And then I'm still writing journalism, and I have a new small publishing house with my wife and friends as an homage to the peace we achieve. We are publishing new, very young writers here in Colombia. We have published two women, very young women, the first book of each of them. We have plans and we have dreams, and that's beautiful.
Hector, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oblivion by Hector Abad is published by Old Street Publishing. You've been listening to Meet the Writers, produced by Claire Urban, and with thanks to Jaime Abayo and Natalia Algarin of the Gabriel Garcia Marquez Foundation. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.